Hello, my name's Jenny and welcome to the first episode of the Writing Lessons From podcast, or as I've recently discovered, it's called a blogcast, because Writing Lessons From started as a project on Substack. Every week I would write and post an article breaking down a story, a TV show, a film, a podcast, comedy special, basically anything that involves telling a story. And I would try and figure out what writers could learn from it, both the good and the bad. I'm a big believer in writers consuming stories, but that doesn't mean just reading everything. We need to watch and listen too. Basically, I found this very helpful for my own writing and wondered if it could prove thought-provoking and helpful to other writers. And now I'm recording a year's worth of articles and relaunching the project. Let's start with a little, hi, how are you? Hi, how are you? I'm all right. I'm okay. For those who don't know, I'm a romance writer. I write Christmas romances, and I'm also a fantasy author. And I'm working on a fantasy book at the moment, but I've just had to kind of give up on a Christmas romance book I was trying to write for this year, for this Christmas. I have written one already. I always try and aim for two a year, which is a lot. It's a lot, isn't it? Why did I do that? Anyway, I'm not going to do it this year. I'm not, because the second book is just the story. There's something missing, and I haven't figured out what the missing piece is yet. It'll come to me eventually. I'm assuming it'll maybe be a book for next year. But watch this space. I will let you know about the upcoming Christmas romance that will be out in September, I think, and the fantasy book that I'm really enjoying writing. It feels like a while since I've written any fantasy, so it's been nice to get back into that. But yes, so I mean, that's who I am as well. I am a fantasy writer predominantly, but I also love a good Christmas romance. If there is a Christmas chocolate log involved and some pretty fairy lights and the weather is cold, that's great. Especially at the moment, it's lovely writing a Christmas romance during the summer and heat waves. Although it's August now, so it's turning very autumny. The kids have just broken up from school. Is this a good time to launch a podcast? I don't know. Anyway, that's what I'm up to at the moment. I hope your writing is going well, whatever it is that you're doing. I hope you're enjoying it. That's the main part. Right. Okay. Onwards. On to the blogcast. And for now, I'm going to go back to the beginning, an article I wrote for my blog back in 2023. See? Blogcast. And we're going to start with the film A Quiet Place. You ready? Here we go. When it came out, A Quiet Place was never really on my radar. I only eventually watched it because A, I adore Emily Blunt with all of my being. And B, I recently listened to her interview on the Smartless podcast, where she talked about how her husband, John Krasinski, wrote the script for A Quiet Place after she suggested that he did, and how after reading it, she asked to play his wife. I am not good with horror films. The only horror I will ever watch, read, or listen to are stories with supernatural, paranormal, or extraterrestrial elements. A Quiet Place is a sci-fi horror, but to be honest, the main horrific parts are all jump elements. It meant that I was tense throughout the film, and my poor dog was tense with me, watching me, wondering what was wrong. From here onwards, a disclaimer, you're on the edge of the introduction. Watch out for the spoilers going forward. And when I say spoilers, I don't just mean spoilers for A Quiet Place. I'm also going to be talking about the endings of War of the Worlds, Independence Day, Signs, Mars Attacks, and Attack the Block. I think that's it. So if you don't want any of those films ruined, maybe skip this episode, go to the next one. That's what it's there for. A Quiet Place tells the simple story of an Earth that has been invaded by aliens that have all body armor and incredibly sensitive hearing. They're blind, but that doesn't matter because they can hear you. The only way to survive is to stay completely silent. We follow a family living silently, probably helped by the fact that their eldest child is deaf, and the family know ASL, American Sign Language, which makes communication a lot easier. They're living on an isolated farm in the US, and after the harrowing death of their youngest, the wife, slash mother, Emily Blunt, is pregnant again. Let chaos ensue. It's a good setup. How on earth do you survive in a world where you must stay silent if you're giving birth without midwives or pain relief? But that's just the tip of the iceberg. What if you burp suddenly? What if you sneeze? Guys, what if you sneeze? Despite the silence of the film, the characters are developed surprisingly well. When studied, this is done through the simplicity of the story and the setting. We don't need to hear them talking to know who they are. We can see the daughter's hearing aid, which doesn't work. We saw how the youngest was killed and therefore know that the daughter must blame herself. We know that the father is excellent at keeping his family alive due to all of the physical evidence, the sand marking the pathways around the farm to keep their footsteps silent, the CCTV cameras, the notes and clippings he's collected trying to find a way out of all of this. The film itself is powerful. Immediately, the family are plunged into grief. Hope is created by the promise of a new life, and there are sacrifices made by the father in order to keep his family safe. I found myself crying my eyes out, and I'm still not sure if the crying was worth it. A parent killing themselves to save their children is always going to open the floodgates and have you reaching for the tissues, whatever the context. Sometimes the simplest and most obvious plot points are necessary, and sometimes they're just the easy way out. Let's get to that ending. It turns out the high-pitched radio waves are too much for the aliens. It hurts them, leaves them discombobulated and vulnerable. They open up their faces, as you do, to expose their ears and mouth, and Emily Blunt's character shoots them in the face. Hang on. Whoa. Back up. I have so many questions. Presumably, when these aliens first landed, the military attacked them and found their natural armour too much to get through. Fair enough. But considering the aliens have to open up their armour to hear and to eat, did no one try shooting them when they were vulnerable? Had no one read or watched The Hobbit or Star Wars? On Greek mythology and go for the really obvious Achilles heel? Honestly, the first time we saw an alien opening its face to listen, my initial reaction was shoot it in the ear. And when the military were attacking them, presumably throwing everything they had at these aliens because otherwise humans will go extinct, they didn't want to use a bomb or an explosive that, oh, I don't know, whistles? They didn't want to use radio signals that might have gone wrong and created that high-pitched noise? Really? After I watched A Quiet Place, I padded through my house to get ready for bed, knocking things over and realising just how quickly I would die if those aliens did invade. And I got to thinking about all the other alien invasion films that I've seen. I do love an alien invasion film. The answer to being rid of the aliens is always a simple one, just as in A Quiet Place. But it's not always the most obvious, which is important. In War of the Worlds, the common cold brings down the aliens, which is sort of genius. It works logically, and examples of common mild viruses killing thousands thanks to an invasion can be seen throughout human history. In Independence Day, I love that film, the virus idea is taken to another level. The military can't get through the alien shields. By breaking into the mothership in disguise and exposing its workings to a computer virus, they're able to bring the shields down and defeat the aliens. A Quiet Place reminded me more of Signs, due to how problematic it felt. Aliens invade a planet that is 70% water when, it turns out, water burns their skin. The aliens are fought back by a family smashing glasses of water against the attacking alien, which suggests it didn't once rain when the aliens invaded. None fell into a swimming pool. None came accidentally into contact with a hose or sprinkler. None of them went to the beach. Which led me to Mars Attacks. Good old Mars Attacks. The aliens have landed, they can't be stopped, until someone plays Tom Jones loudly through a speaker and the aliens' heads explode. Now that's genius. And what about Attack the Block? Easily one of my favourite alien films ever, thanks to its beautiful depiction of aliens and fantastic political messages. The aliens are essentially killed by clever thinking and fire, and by a group of teenagers, which is incredibly simple, but the key here is that it all happens in one night. The military don't even get a chance to be involved. So what could have been done differently with A Quiet Place? I thought A Quiet Place was an okay film. It wasn't bad, but neither was it great. But it could have been great. The concept was interesting. It just needed tightening up. The ending ripped me out of the story, because if no one had thought of trying this tactic against the aliens until now, then maybe humans deserve to go extinct. If you've watched A Quiet Place, what would you have done differently? Personally, I would have made more of that nail on the stairs. Both me and my husband spent the second half of the film believing it would harm an alien at some point. But no, it just stabs Emily Blunt when she could really do without it and allows her to create a bloody footprint path for her husband to follow. That nail could have been the key to everything. Perhaps aliens don't have heavy armour on the soles of their feet. Why would the military check there? And are deathly allergic to iron when it is consumed or in their blood? Or perhaps it's rust rather than iron. Maybe Emily Blunt's human blood on the nail would burn the alien's armour. The fact that the nail was shown in such a way only to be used to injure poor Emily Blunt's character is an example of the Chekhov's gun principle not being used in the best way. The principle, also known as the gun on the mantelpiece, was created by the playwright Anton Chekhov to explain how writers should make obvious an object, or concept, idea, system, etc., only if it will be used later in the story. If the reader slash viewer knows there is a gun on the mantelpiece, then it had better have been fired by the end of the story. If it doesn't come back to play a big part in the story, the reader slash viewer will be disappointed. Hello, we were the disappointed viewers. The other biggest change I would have made would have been to have focused more on their eldest child, the deaf daughter. She was the key to killing an alien, but she could have been so much more. In a world where being silent can save your life, perhaps you need to follow the people who live in silence or a form of silence. It was wonderful to have aspects of the film from her point of view, but I wanted more. I wanted more from the whole film. Next time you're consuming a story and it's just not doing it for you, take a step back and think about what you would have done differently. Let the ideas flow, get creative, and you never know, you might find something that you want to write about. Ta-da! If you enjoyed that, then I hope you'll join me for the next Writing Lessons From blogcast, which will be all about Ozark and that ending, especially. In the meantime, please hit follow and come join the mailing list at writeintothewoods.com to get the brand new articles from Writing Lessons From straight into your inbox. Until next time, my fellow storyteller,